Okay, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Memhamud Bet, four lines from the bottom. Gemara is continuing with the latter half of the Mishnah. We discussed this yesterday in the Mishnah. The Mishnah itself gives two different qualifications or ways to determine the threshold of something being a problem. What we discussed yesterday was the difference between a kazayit and less than a kazayit. The Mishnah also mentions v'chein linyan tumah im yakpid alav chotzeit. If he cares about it and he's makpid on it, then it's a chatzitza, it becomes a chatzitza, and the Gemara discusses what that means. If he wants it to be there, then it becomes part and parcel of the areva. So when we discussed in the Mishnah, I gave a broader general explanation, which is the bottom line is the same. That what we're trying to determine here is whether the item is part and parcel of the areva, or the item has significance in of itself. So to create significance, you have two ways to create significance. One of them is size, which is what we discussed yesterday about kazayit and less than a kazayit. The other way to have significance is whether hakpada is on the personal, subjective view of the individual towards that item. But the Gemara wants to understand now is that the way the Mishnah lays it out is it talks about chametz and kazayit and less than a kazayit. Then it talks about tumah, says hakpada, not hakpada. But there's a conjunction between them, which is b'chein. They're the same din. Well, they're really not the same din, because one of them uses kazayit and less than kazayit. One of them uses hakpada and no hakpada. So how do you say that they're the same din? They're really not the same din. Now, again, the way I explained it, but generally, they're in the same direction. They have the same concept, but they're still not the same din. And that's what the Gemara says. V'chein linyan tuva. Im akpid alav chotzeit, v'im rotze b'kiyumei aruke ariva. Are they really comparable? Hotam b'shi'ur batalya milto. When it comes to chametz, the threshold or the defining factor for significance is size. Hocha b'kpeid batalya milto. Over here, it has to do with your subjective interaction with this item. Whether you care that it's there or you don't care that it's there. I'm Rav Yehuda, Ema. So now we're going to have a number of tips about the Amoraim all the way to the next Mishnah to reconcile between Chametz and Tumah. So Rav Yehuda says, Ema, Uli Inyan Tumah, Eino Kein. So first solution is by the Amora. Rav Yehuda says, just change the Lashon HaMishnah to say not that Lechein Le'inun Tumah, it is so. Rather, Lechein Le'inun Tumah, Eino Kein. Tumah has a similar concept about significance and the lack of significance, but it's determined by a different shiur. And therefore, the Mishnah should really read, V'chein l'inyo tumah eino kein. Tumah is not like chametz. Chametz is determined by size. Tumah is determined by your relationship with the item. Amalei bayi, v'ha, v'chein l'inyo tumah ketani. That's very nice. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, V'chein l'inyo tumah. So why are you changing it to l'inyo tumah eino kein? That's an addition of your own. And that's really what the Mishnah says. Elo amar bayi. So bayi gives an alternative to reconcile between chametz and tumah and says, Chen le'inyan tziruf tumah bePesach. Then when it comes to tziruf of tumah and Pesach, it has the same din. Uveshar yimot hashana ika plukta. But in the remainder of the year, there is a differentiation. Echidami. What are we speaking about here? Gon deika pachot mikabeitzat ochlim. You have less than a kabeitzat ochlim. V'nagu b'hai batzek bePesach. And then they touch this batzek and Pesach. Disro chashu. Because then it's significant. Umitz taref. And it'll come together. Veshar yimot hashana. When it comes to the remainder of the year, the kabedeto talya milta has to do with whether you care about it or not. If he wants it to stay there, it has the din of an areva. So what Abaye basically says is, first of all, what is this din of tumah that we're speaking about here? The din of tumah speaking here is not being mekabel tumah going to the mikvah, but rather the din of tumah that we've seen in this mesechta a number of times, which is in order for ochel to be conveying tumah, it has to be the size of a kabetza. The kabeitza size of ochel is able to convey tumah. Less than that, it doesn't convey tumah. So that's the starting point. So that's the tumah. When we say b'chein l'inyan tumah, that's the tumah we're speaking about here. The second thing that we're trying to determine is, do you have a kabeitza or do you not have a kabeitza over here? Well, what ends up happening is that you have dough in the trough, but that dough in itself is not the size of a kabeitza, or the tamei piece of it is not the size of a kabeitza, but in the wall of the areva, you have some dough that you put in there that's sitting in the crack. And that dough, together with the dough in the areva, can make up a kabeitza. So that's the question here. Do we consider it to be a single unit of a kabeitza? Or do we not consider it to be a single unit of a kabeitza? So when it comes to Pesach, on Pesach itself, where the Isur Chametz grants additional significance to Chametz, therefore, we have the threshold be kazayit and less than a kazayit, because that's what makes Chametz significant. Kazayit. So if it's above a kazayit, it will be mitzaref. It'll join together with the chametz that's there because it's already significant. If it's significant, it's not batel. It's not nullified in the trough. It's considered to be a separate entity. If it's a separate entity, then it can be mitzaref. It can join together with the dough that's next to it, and then you have a kabeitza here. But that threshold will be kazayit or less than a kazayit because what's granting its significance over here is isuro, isur chametz. Isur chametz is determined by a kazayit. That's what the beginning of the Mishnah is discussing. Then the remainder of the Mishnah, the latter half of the Mishnah is saying the ika plukta. Plukta doesn't mean a machloket, but plukta here means there's a differentiation by whether he's makpid or not makpid. And that's the remainder of the year when you don't have the isur chametz. That means that the isur is not granting it chashivut. Then chashivut will be determined by your subjective relationship with this item. And that's what the Mishnah is reading. The Mishnah has a single case, but it's actually telling you that the outcome or the halacha that is associated with this question will change. Depends if you're on Pesach, or depends if you're after Pesach. On Pesach, where Isur Chametz is the determining factor to whether something is significant, then on Pesach, Kizayit will tell you whether it's significant or not significant. After Pesach, where there's no longer any Isur Chametz, the only thing that's going to determine whether it's Chashuv or not Chashuv is Hakpada. Hakpada will tell you that. And that's how Abaye reads the Mishnah. So what Abaye has done is said to us, you're right, there are two different methods for determining whether something is significant, but those two methods are not necessarily irreconcilable. We can reconcile them by saying that they apply at different times. One of them applies in Pesach, one of them applies when it's not Pesach, but we're after the same din, we're after the same halacha as to whether the item in the wall is going to be mitzaref to the dough that is inside the trough. So that's the solution of Abaye. Matki for Rava. Rava challenges Abaye's answer and says, Miktani mitzaref. Where did you see in the Mishnah that it says the word mitzaref, that they joined together? Abaye's whole answer is premised on this idea that the dough inside the trough connects or is joined together with the dough in the walls of the Areva. And if that's the case, the whole issue in the Mishnah is whether it's mitzaref or not mitzaref. That's the key question at hand. Yet the Mishnah never mentioned the word mitzaref. It means v'hachotzeitz ketani. The only thing the Mishnah mentions with regards to Tumah is whether it's chotzeitz. Does it create a chatzitza? Does it create a barrier here? So El Amar Rava, here we have the third solution to our problem. So Rava says, you want to be mitaher the areva? Hechidami. What's the case here? This trough became tamei, ubailet bulei v'pesach. And he wants to put in the mikveh on Pesach to make it tahor. Di usuro chashuv, chutzeitz. On Pesach, where chametz has a significance to it that's granted it because of the isur chametz, therefore the kazayit is the threshold. You want to put in the mikveh on Pesach. If it has a kazayit chametz in there, problematic. Less than a kazayit chametz, it's fine. That's the determining threshold for whether it's considered to be a part of the areva or separate from the areva. And that will determine whether going to the mikveh and putting in the mikveh helps. Below sakala tefillah. So if it's chashuv, the tefillah won't help it. Shayimot ha-shana b'kpeda ta'yamilta imakvira lav kotzeit. If he's makpid on this item, he's going to remove it, then it's a chatzitza. It's a separation between the areva and the waters of the mikveh, and it doesn't work. On the other hand, if he doesn't care about it, and it's going to remain there, and he's not going to remove it, it's batel to the kli. Then when he puts it in the mikveh, it's as if the main mikveh touched the kli everywhere, and it's not a problem. So what Rava does is take a step from Abaye and solve one of the other problems. He does something similar to Abaye, which is that he says that the two different measurements that are mentioned here in the Mishnah deal with different time periods in the year. One is the measurement for during Pesach, one is the measurement for after Pesach, similar to what Abaye did. Kazayit and not a kazayit about Pesach. Hakbada, ein hakbada is for after Pesach. What he differs with Abaye is Abaye seems to want to maintain this idea that we're talking about Tumah. Rava says, no, we're not talking Tumah, we're talking about Tahara, meaning being Metaher, the item from Tumah, and that's why the word Chatzitza or Chotzeitz is relevant over here. Chatzitza or chotzeitz is relevant when you go to the mikveh. Chatzitza or chotzeitz is not relevant when you're trying to be mitztaref, put two things together that Abaye did. So that is Rava's solution to the problem. The problem with Rava's solution is matkifla Rapapa. Rapapa says, miktani v'chein linyan tahara. What Rava is really suggesting is that the Mishnah is discussing issues of tahara, not issues of tumah. Yeah, something became tameh. Now you want to be mitaharit. Going to be mitaharit is the main issue. It's not becoming tameh that's the issue. Ha, linyan tumah ktani. It says the inyan tumah, v'chein linyan tumah. So it sounds like we're talking about Tumah as in real Tumah. So El Amar of Papa, Papa makes another suggestion. If you want Tumah to affect the Areva, hechidami. What's the case here? You have a sheretz that touches this row inside of the Areva. On Pesach, where Kazayit is the determining factor as whether it's Chashuv. If it's Chashuv, that means it's a separate entity from the Areva. If the sheretz touches the food won't affect the kli because it's separate. The food will be tameh, the batzek will be tameh, but the kli, the areva, will remain tahor. For there's no tumah here. B'shayimotashana, in the remainder of the year, the kabeda tayim, it has to do hakpada. Im makpid alav, chutzeit. If he's makpid that he's going to remove this dough from there, then it's chutzeit. And if the sheretz is the dough is tamei, but the kli remains tahor. Im rotzei b'kiyumo, on the other hand, if he's going to leave the dough there permanently and becomes a part and parcel of the kli, then ayuk ariva. And if that's the case, the sheretz touched the ariva now. Even though it touched the dough, it's really touching the ariva. And the entire ariva is tmeya. Now, the way Rashi phrased it over here, it's not so clear. The way Rashi reads, there's almost a steer in Rashi. The Bach takes out a couple of words in between the two Rashis and puts them together. And therefore, Rashi would be saying over here is that even on Pesach itself, Kazayit, if you're above a Kazayit, then it's a problem. It's Chotzeit because it's significant. If you're less than a Kazayit, that doesn't mean on Pesach that it's okay. Less than a Kazayit, then it's subject to the Hakpada, like the rest of the year. If you're makpid on it, then it's problematic, or it's chutzeit. If you're not makpid on it, then it's butel. So the idea that kazayit is the threshold on Pesach is not entirely true. It just means that if you get above a kazayit, your subjective relationship with this item is no longer relevant. It's only below a kazayit that it's relevant. For the remainder of the year, your relationship is all that matters. Your interaction with this item matters. Kazayit, not kazayit, that doesn't matter at all. And that's the difference between above a kazayit and below a kazayit. Here we had a number of attempts by the Amoraim to solve the problem. We first had the attempt of Rabbi Yehuda, which just tried to say that Mishnah doesn't really mean what it says. It doesn't mean le'inyan tuma, yes, like chametz, but rather le'inyan tuma, that is not like chametz. Teira Abaye say no. It says v'chein le'inyan tuma, it's got to be the same. So what's the same over here? We're talking about tziruf. Whether you give him mitzarif, the tuma, to the dome in the wall to make up the kabetza to convey tuma. That was a biased solution to the problem. As well as the fact that he separates between Pesach and Shari Yimot HaShanah. Rav rejects Abaye's explanation because Abaye ignores the fact that it is Chatzitza in the Mishnah that has to do with Kotzei, it's not to do with Tumah. Rav then makes a suggestion about Chatzitza that's going to the Mikra over here, and that's the question at hand. But Pava rejects that because it doesn't say V'chein Li'an Tara. It's not to do with becoming Tara, it's going to do with becoming Tameh. So Rav Pava basically takes Rav and uses Rav's explanation, but just in the reverse scenario. Instead of saying you're going to be a mitahara in the mikvah, it's the tumah is being conveyed to the kli now. Does the tumah go to the kli? If you touch the dough, what impact does that have on the kli? And that'll depend on whether you are makpid on it, not a makpid on it the rest of the year, on a Pesach. If it's above a kazayit, it's chashuv enough that it's considered a separate entity. Versus less than that, where it's dependent on your hakpada. Okay, now we'll move on to the next mishnah, which is batzeg acherish. Talking about a batzeg that is, call it hard of hearing. If you look at a piece of dough, or is that a sur? Then it's a sur. The question here is, you have a dough that's not giving you any of the simanim, any of the signs that it is chametz, but it's already started to, whether it's become pale, it's started down the path where you notice that it might be becoming chametz, but it hasn't reached any of the shiurim that we've seen with regards to chametz. So what does he do now? He takes a similar piece of dough that's already become chametz, that's from the same time period, and then he compares them. He says, look, that's chametz, and this is probably chametz as well. It's a way to match things up without having an exact shiur, but a way to look at the parallel dough that looks similar to it. Now, why is it called batzeka charish? Rashi says is, shemishunahu b'charish, hazesh ishlo oznaim ve'enu nikar im shomeim lav, that this charish has ears, but despite the fact that he's ears, you're uncertain as to whether he is hearing or he's not hearing, because that's the definition of a cherish, is that he doesn't hear. You can be speaking and he has ears, so it looks like he should be hearing, but in the end he's not hearing. Or Rashi brings a lishna achrina, batzeik acheres kasheh kecheres. It is hard like clay utensil. Venukar sheachmitz, because it's so hard, you're unable to discern or determine as to whether it is really chametz or not chametz. So the Rishonim here speak about the fact that either when you bang on it or you hit on it, it doesn't make any sound to give you feedback about whether it is chametz. Or the comparison to a cheresh is that, just like by the cheresh, it's indiscernible from its outside appearance as to whether he can hear you or not hear you. So too, this item, from its outer appearance, you cannot determine whether it's chametz or not. Or the last thing is that it's hard. The word here is not cheresh, but cheres. And cheres is like kli cheres, is a hard clay utensil, earthenware utensil. And this item is so hard, so you're unable to determine whether it is chametz or not chametz. So it's one of those three explanations as to the meaning of kecheresh over here or kecheresh over here.
But a similar idea here that the kecheresh is describing for us an uncertainty with regards to this chala. And when we have this uncertainty, how do we deal with it? We match it up with another chala that we have another isa, another dough that was needed at the same time, and it's already become chametz. And we look, does it look similar in color? Does it look similar in its character traits? So now the Gemara says, imein kiyotzebo, in sham kiyotzebo mahu. If there's nothing similar to it, now what do you do? That's a great test. If you happen to have a piece of dough around them, it turned into chametz that was just done at the exact same time. What happens if you don't have that? Then what's the test now? So Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, k'dei sheleich adam mi'migdal nunya l'tveria. I'll tell you, if the dough has sat around for the amount of time it takes to walk from migdal nunya l'tveria, meal, which is a meal, then it's problematic. V'neima meal. Why doesn't the Gemara just say meal, and then you would know that? K'mash malan, d'shua d'meal k'migdala nunya v'tveria. Comes to teach you a sidebar, which is that you want to know how long a meal is. It's the distance between migdal nunya and Tveria. So that's how I know about this meal. But now, the meal that we have, it's a machloket in the Rishonim, what the amount of time that is encapsulated or captured by a meal, but generally, we'd say that it's 18 minutes. This is where 18 minutes comes from for matzah. Just the Gemara basically says here, if you're uncertain with regards to the chametz, then you use the meal, distance of a meal, the time that would take you to walk a meal, that will be the determining factor. If you are before that time period, you know for sure it's not chametz. After that time period, you have to be suspicious about it being chametz. And that is the meal. The meal is 18 minutes. It tells you you got to get it done within the 18 minutes. You got to get the dough from beginning to end into the oven and bake before the 18 minutes elapse. And this is the source for this, which is right here, this idea of the meal. Now the Gemara is going to digress into a sugya that has nothing to do with our Gemara, but it happens to be that it's authored by somebody we just quoted, which is Amar Rabbeu Amar B'Shem Ben Lakish. That he's the author of both of these positions, so the Gemara is going to bring it down over here. Similar to what the Gemara does in Brachot, when it's going through, you have a number of memrot from Amora, they just one after the next. It's giving you a memrot that not necessarily connected, but because they're authored by the same person. So it's over here, this is authored by the same individual, but it has nothing to do with the previous Gemara, which is Ligavel, Ulitzfilah, Ulitzilat Yadayim. When it comes to kneading, when it comes to davening, and when it comes to washing one's hands, Arba Milim. The din is that you have to go four meal. Avram Nachman Bar Yitzchak Aibo Amra. It's not that it was said in the name of Shimon Lakish, but rather it was said in the name of Aibo. V'arba Amarba. And he talked about four items. You only mentioned three. He talked about four. V'chadaminayu. And that fourth item is Ibud. Is the tanning, the working of the skins. It's not. Kulan Shibdan Oshalech Ven Gede Avuda. If you have a part, soft part of the skin, which has a din like basar, and be problematic with regards to Tumah, when does that leave it? When does the skins that have this softer part that can be eaten or is edible, when do they lose their shame ochel? That's the kulam shibdan. If you tan them, if you work the leather, then it's not a problem anymore. So, oh, shelech ven kede avudah. Or he allowed them to be walked on the amount of time of avudah. Torim. Then they are torim. Chutz meor adam, the exception to that is the skin of an individual, of a person. Bekama kede avudah. How much does it have to be out there and trampled on and stomped on in order to make it into a skin that is now worked, says kedei avuda, which is, how much is that kedei avuda? Amar Rabbi Aibo, Amar Rabbi Yanai, kedei hiluch arba milim. The distance it takes to walk for meal. So here, the part of the processing of the skins is one is that they sit in these vats of liquid. The other way to do it is that they place it on the ground and people trample on it and stomp on it, and that's what works the skins. So here the Gemara says, how much does it have to be out there for people to walk on it in order for it to be worked over and it's no longer as a din of basar of flesh, but now it becomes something else? That's arba'a milim. It's the amount of distance for four meal. So now, amar Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chinina lo shanu alufanav. That's only true if it's a continuation of his journey. But achorav, if it's behind him, afilu mil eno chozer. Even if it's a single meal, you don't go back. Amar Ravacha umina mil hu de eno chozer. From that, we can be midayek. You don't go back for a meal. But if it's less than a meal, you would be obligated to go back. So what we're thinking about here, to get clarification of what I just read, which is, we're talking about three cases. One is the gavel, one is tefillah, and one is netilat yadayim. Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, with regards to gavel means kneading. Rashi says the gavel means that you're at home and you're going to hire somebody to work your dough for you. But that person, that clay bala bayit, are not tehorim, they're tmeim. So they really need to go to the mikveh. How far do we force you to go to the mikveh? How much trouble did Chachamim make you go through to go to the mikveh? So here the Gemara answers, ad arba'a milim. Until four meal, they are makpid on it. Then Tosafot disagrees with this explanation. We'll see why later. But he says the gavel over here is somebody who's traveling. He's traveling on the way, and he wants to make his challah. He wants to work his dough and keep it tahor. How far do we make him walk while he's traveling? How far onward do we make him go before you just say to him, okay, you can't do it, but tahara, fine. when do we say that? What is that threshold? And the next thing is tefillah, is davening. So in tefillah, there's two different interpretations. One is the Pirush Rashi. Pirush Rashi about tefillah is tefillah b'tzibur. What's the obligation in terms of going to make a minyan? That's the one way to read it. Or the other possibility is the Oruch, who says tefillah means to wash one's hands for tefillah. How far do we make you walk in order to wash Netilat Yadayim for tefillah? And the last thing is Netilat Yadayim, which is Netilat Yadayim for Amotzi. Now, why it's important, what the Machlokot here, first of all, the Gabel Gabel, Tosafot thinks that his explanation is correct and not like Rashi. I mean, he takes the Oruch's explanation, he thinks it's not like Rashi's, because Rashi has to say over here that when the Gemara later on comes and qualifies and says it's only in front of him, but not behind him, Rashi says that's not talking about Gavel. That's only talking about Tefillah Netilat Yadayim. Gavel has nothing to do with that. According to Rashi, the person's in the city when he's talking about the Gavel. So Tosfos says, no, the case has got to be the same as Tefillah Netilat Yadayim, and therefore it has to be on the Derech. That's why Tosfos gave that alternative explanation. With regards to Tefillah, we have Tosafot over here says why he likes Rashi's interpretation, that Tefillah over here is talking about davening of the Tzibor, not washing one hand for Tefillah, because he says that we have a memra on the Gemara Brachot, which we discussed, which is that because the cursed people who used to look for water at the time that was come to davening. You're going to miss davening looking for the water. He cursed them. He said, it's not worth it. What are you doing? When are you going to wash your hands? You're going to miss davening. What is this din of tefillah here? All of a sudden in tefillah, you have akpada, you got to wash your hands, and then you have to go four meal this way, one meal back. That's what it says. There's no such qualifications. We say that better to daven than it is to wash your hands. In that if you have a choice between being on time and washing your hands, we'd opt for you to be on time or to not miss out on davening. There happens to be that in the Gemara and Brachot there's a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to what this applies to. Rashi says it only applies to Kriyat Shema. It has to do with Kriyat Shema because Kriyat Shema has a Zman, a fixed time when you can say it. If you're looking for water, you're going to miss that time. And Tefillah is Kol Hayom, or Tefillah has a wider range in which it can be said. And therefore, Rashi suggests that it's different between Kriyat Shema and Tefillah. And then Tosafot over there says that Kriyat Shema and Tefillah are all the same. And just like you have to be makpid for Netilat Yadayim by Kriyat Shema, you also have to be makpid on Netilat Yadayim for Tefillah. That's one thing. The next thing is this idea of going to Minyan. That you have to go to Minyan, you have to make a Minyan, you have to do this. And the last item that we talked about was Netilat Yadayim for bread. What's very interesting is that the Shulchan Aruch, when he codifies this halacha, brings down all the interpretations here. He does not limit it. He says, when it's talking about tefillah, by if you go to tefillah by tzibur in the Shulchan Aruch, over there says that you have to travel for meal to go to a minyan. We don't allow you to just say, no minyan. I'm not going to minyan. I don't care. If there's a minyan within for meal, you got to go to that minyan. If it's on the way, meaning that it's in the same direction you're traveling. If it's backtracking on your travel, you have to go back up to a meal in order to backtrack in order to daven with a minyan. So that's number one. Number two is, he brings the halacha down with regards to washing one's hands when they go into tefillah. One should wash their hands going into tefillah, and you have to look for the water in order to do that. The last thing is, netilat yadayim for amotzi. Then over there again, he says that you have to be makpid to try to wash one's hands for netilat yadayim, and if you can't or you are unable to do this, then we obligate you to go four meal forward or one meal backwards in order to do this. The alternative to washing one's hands is being menakeh them, to clean them. So that might work by davening. It certainly doesn't work for Netilat Yadayim for Hamotzi. So Lalocha, we actually bring down all three of these items. And all of these three of these items, one is obligated to move. The Mishnah Berurah mentions that if this is talking about by Derech, when you're traveling, then he says when a person's in their house, it's the equivalent. Just like if you're on the road, you have to backtrack from your trip at least a meal in order to get to a minyan. If you're sitting in a house, then a meal circumference around your house should be no worse than that. You're obligated to get out of your house and get to the minyan that's there, even if it's a meal away. Now, the meal, as we said before, is 18 minutes. And we discussed this in the past. Those 18 minutes that are measured by the meal, is that a measurement in time? Or is that a measurement in distance? Is distance the only thing that matters? So if it's a meal, it's a meal. It doesn't matter how you can transport yourself. It doesn't matter if you go in a car today or if you walked in the past. Either one, a meal is the determining factor. On the other hand, there are those, many that believe, that the 18 minutes here is the equivalent 18 minutes today. That means that if you are 18 minutes in the past walking today in the car, you'd have to go 18 minutes in the car to go find a minyan. That's how much the obligation would be on you to find it, because at a meal, you're going to have to find a minyan. And so that means in the circumference around your house, within 18 minutes of your house, there's a minyan. We're going to obligate you to go to that minyan in order to find it. Now, the last thing to discuss over here is just whether l'alocha, these are me'akev. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Bach and others that we are makpid on washing yadayim for tefillah, and the Rambam says it's one of the items that's me'akev tefillah. If you don't do it, you can't daven. Your tefillah toe is not a tefillah. Nevertheless, despite the fact he says, v'shatat chak, it's better to go into minyan and be part of the minyan if you're not going to get it. Just wash your hands, clean your hands off, even if you can't wash them. That's in one area where we have a little bit more of a dispensation with regards to this. With regards to minyan, there's really no dispensation. I mean, you have to follow. These are the halachot that are laid out here. And same is true by netilat yadayim for bread. Next Mishnah. Ketzad mafishim chalav betuma biyom tov. What happens if you have a dough that is tamei? This dough that's tamei, you want to be mafrish chalav from it, or you want to bake it on yom tov. In order to bake it on yom tov, you have to take off chalav from it. And then you can bake it, and you can utilize it. Meaning it's tamea, but it's chulin, so that's fine. The problem is the piece that you take off to give for chala turns into truma. It has the same din as truma. And that you can't do anything with on yom tov, because now I have a problem. I take off this item from the dough, and now I have this little piece of chala that I need to give to the kohen. Kohen can't do anything with it on yom tov, because he, number one, can't eat it, because it's tamea. It's truma tamea or chala tamea. Number two is he can't burn it on yom tov. Because burning on Yom Tov is not allowed because you can't do things that are ochel nefesh. Things that are used for the consumption or eating of food. This is about eating the food. Here you're destroying it. You're not trying to eat it. And the last other part of that is that you're not allowed to be soreif kodashim on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to burn kodashim on Yom Tov. So now I have a problem here. I have a problem that this challah is going to be sated out. It's going to be tmeah. And now I can't do anything with it. I can't burn it. I can't eat it. I can't do anything with it. Okay. What's the big deal? The big deal is that it's Pesach. It's Pesach now, and this dough, if you leave it around, it's going to rise and become chametz. It's not a problem. I have possibility of chametz turning up here, and I have no way to prevent it. So what do I do? So that's what the Mishnah is discussing here. Ketzem afshim chala betumah biyom tov. Rabbi Eliezer omer, lo tikra la'ashem ad shiteafet. Do not call the item chala until it's finished baking. Rabbi Eliezer's suggestion is very interesting. He says, listen, if you bake the whole thing up front, including the chala in it, you do not separate out the chala from it, then any piece that's in there, or any part of the dough that you look at on an independent basis, could possibly be chulin, or could be the chala. You just don't know. The fact that it could be chulin is enough of a reason maybe to allow you to bake it on Yom Tov, because it's all the ochel nefesh. If you look at each piece independently, that could be chulin. Since it could be chulin, we're going to allow you to bake it on Yom Tov. So he solves the problem by saying, don't make it into chala until after the fact. Once it's baked, you'll be mafish the challah. At that point, we don't mind. Because what is it going to be? A piece of matzah. You want to be mafish piece of matzah. You hold on to the piece of matzah. You burn it. Afterwards, it won't become chametz. You don't need to burn it right away. You can burn it after Yom Tov. You can take care of it then. You can burn the challah. There's no problem. That's the suggestion of Rabbi Eliezer. Ben Beter Omer, Tatil Bitzonei. No problem. Just dunk it in cold water. Cold water causes the reduction in the fermentation and the leavening process. I saw earlier in the Masechta that concept of whether cold water is enough to cause the leavening to stop. So over here we're saying, hey, you dump it into the cold water, it's fine. And not that Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Yeshua necessarily disagree with this fact, that putting it into the water would stop it. They just don't want that to be the methodology that we use, l'chatchila. Yes, b'dieved, if it starts to rise, you can use cold water as a way to retard the leavening process. And even the Rabbeinu Tam brings it in Tosfot over here, that you can use this, that if you have a problem like this, you should throw it into the tzonein. But nevertheless, they don't want this to be the primary way that we deal with it, that we tell people to put on tzonein, because it's too risky. And therefore, that's not the methodology you want to use, but not that they fundamentally disagree with the idea that you could use tzonein.
I'm Rabbi Yeshua. That was the third position here, which is, lo zehu chamet shemuzarim alav b'bayre u'bali matzei. This is not including the items where there's a problem b'bayre u'bali matzei. It's not yours. In order for it to be a problem, by your by must be yours. This is not yours. El mafrishata, you take off the chala, menicha ad ha'erev. Just leave it around till night. If it becomes chametz, it's on its own. It's on its own reconnaissance. It's not your problem that it becomes chametz. Because it's not yours. And therefore, you're not in violation of by your u'bal yimatzeh. Alright, just to note that, which is described here in the position of Rabbi Eliezer, is actually the way that we handle matzot today. If you go to bake matzot, and any factory that they bake matzot, they go through the whole process of baking the matzot, and they're only mafrish the challah after the afka, after the baking process. Again, the 18 minutes that we spoke about before, they use these clocks of 18 minutes or blocks of 18 minutes in which they bake the challah, and then everything that comes out afterwards, they cover it together,
and what we call hasal mitzarfam, the basket or the capture vehicle, puts them all together, and you mafrish chala from that basket. And that's actually the way that we do it today. This is Rabbi Elazar's opinion. Very similar concept in chala, that you can be mafrish after the fact in order to make sure that you don't have problems of issues of chametz. That's the Mishnah. Lema betovat hana kamiflege. We have a machloket here between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua, and we don't know what the core of their machloket is. All we have is Rabbi Yoshua saying, there's no problem here, just let it go, be mafrish and let it become chametz. And Rabbi Eliezer has a problem with you leaving it around or it becoming chametz. So he says, don't call it challah until after it's finished baking, so you're not going to have a problem with chametz. Rabbi goes, what's the fundamental difference in their opinion? Let us say it has to do with this idea of called tovat hana. Tovat hana is a small amount of benefit that you get. If you're mafrish your trumot and masrot, to mafrish your challah, you have to give it to the kohen, you have to give it to the levi, you have to give it to whoever it belongs to. You as the Baal HaBayit don't even own it, really. You have to give it to all these individuals, and they might even have a claim against you as a class to get this item. No one person could bring the case against you, but as a class, they might have ability to extract it from you. But in the end, what is in your hands is who you give it to. The Baal who owns it can determine which Kohen it goes to, or can even sell that right. He can sell the right to someone else. Someone wants to pay him to give it to a particular Kohen, he can accept money from it. That's called Tovat Hana'a. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the machlok between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is about this Tovat Hana'a kamiflagei. The Rabbi Elazar says Tovat Hana'a mamon. The Tovat Hana'a has real monetary value. Since it has real monetary value, it's as if you own the challah over here. If you own the challah over here, we have a problem with chametz. And that's why Rabbi Elazar says wait till after the baking to separate it out. Rabbi Yehoshua Savar, Tovat Hana'a ain't a mamon. He thinks that this type of diminutive value is not real money. Since it's not real money, it's not yours. If it's not yours, then you don't have to worry about it on Pesach. He says, no, the Kuli Alma, the Savri, everybody holds Tovat Hana'a ain't a mamon. It's not considered to have real monetary value. Here they're arguing about the concept called Ho'il. Ho'il means that if you did, then such and such. Rabbi Elazar Savar Amin and Ho'il. Rabbi Elazar says, we do invoke the principle of Ho'il. If he wants to undo what he did, it becomes his again. Rabbi Shua Savar, Lo Amin and Ho'il, we don't use this concept called Ho'il. What they're premising or what they're based on over here, this idea of Ho'il, is that if I want, I could change the status quo today. And that is because of a belief that anytime Mohan is makdish something or puts it towards a certain goal, it's the equivalent of taking a nether. And since the equivalent of taking a nether, you can go to a chacham afterwards and be ogir the nether. You can undo the nether. That is the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer believes Ho'il. Since you can go now and undermine or change the status of this item by simply going to the Chacham and reversing what you did through Hashalat Nidarim, okay, that's the way Rashi reads it, it's really Hatarat Nidarim, Hashalat Nidarim, or others like the Bartanua read it as being a problem of Hekdesh Ta'ut, that since you were Makdish something by accident, it doesn't really take effect because you regret it after the fact or you don't want it after the fact. Others like the Tosfot Yom Tov point out the problem with that position because Rabbi Eliezer in other places believes that Hekdesh Ta'ut Shmei Hekdesh. So they don't see the two as being correlated. So Rashi thinks it as being Hatarat Nidarim or a heter of a neder like classic Hatarat Nidarim. Whereas there are other Rishonim who think of it as being a problem within being Makdish or Hekdesh Ta'ut.
Either way, Rabbi Eliezer believes that since you can change the status of the item, then the status has monetary value because it's yours. And since it's yours, you can't just say that it's, I'm not going to worry about it. The chametz is no problem for me, because that's just not the case. It's your problem, and you got to worry about the chametz. Because you could undo what you did. If you undid what you did, it would be really yours. And since it could be yours, therefore it's problematic. On the other hand, Rabbi Yoshua believes that we don't say ho'il. We don't say just because you could have made it your own, now it's your own. No. If you didn't make it your own, it's not your own. Therefore, Rabbi Yoshua just says, leave it around and let it become chametz. You don't have any problem with it. It's not yours. It's not your ownership.
Rashi does point out over here that if Rabbi Eliezer is willing to invoke the principle of Ho'il, then why does he actually have to have the challah be called challah after it's been baked? Even if he calls the challah or the item that's challah before it's baked, we can use the principle of Ho'il and say, since if he wants to undo or unwind his shem challah, then he can make this into chulin, and that's why it's permissible to bake it on Yom Tov. Because even though this now is called challah, it's still not really challah because you have yet to give it to the Kohen and finalize that fact. And since Ho'il, since you could undo it or undermine that challah, it's not really challah and you should be able to bake it. So Rashi says, Ein Hochanami,
You're right, he could say this, but Rabbi Eliezer has a better solution. He has one solution where he has to invoke Hillel, and he calls it the Shem Chala beforehand. Or we have the case where he doesn't call it Shem Chala, and yet after the fact he can be a mitzarfan, he can put them together in a basket and then take off Chala from that. Which of those two options are we going to prefer? And that's what Rashi says, V'chol. If we don't have to invoke the principle of Ho'il, we'd rather do it that way than invoke the principle of Ho'il. So despite the fact that we could use Ho'il, nevertheless, we'd rather not use Ho'il. And that's why Rabbi Eliezer says, call the Shem Chala after the fact, even though if you had called it before the fact, it would have worked. And you would have been able to bake it on Yom Tov. On the other hand, Tosafot over here brings a number of alternative answers to the question that Rashi raises. Nivri gives the answer that not a common thing that a person undoes their establishment of something being chala or being truma or masrot. And therefore, he didn't want to make that the primary way by which we deal with such an issue. The Rashba in Tosafot also gives an alternative answer, which is that we allow you to invoke the principle of Ho'il once, but not twice. And even according to the way Rashi is explaining it, you're still invoking the principle of Ho'il, maybe on a lesser level, but you're invoking it because in the end, when you bake the whole item there, and in the end you take off Chala, that piece of Chala was not thrown away. So why do we allow that to happen? Even if you were to take off a small piece from each Chala that you make there, or a small amount from each piece, still there were parts that were not thrown away to be baked on Yom Tov. Nevertheless, we allow you to do that because of Ho'il. What we don't allow you to do is invoke that principle of Ho'il, and then on top of that, invoke another principle of Ho'il, which is, oh, even if you were called it Shem Chala, we allow you to unwind it, or since you can unwind it, therefore it's permissible, then you're invoking the principle of Ho'il twice. Number one Ho'il is that you undo the Shem Chala that's there already. And the second Ho'il is that even when there is no Shem Chala, there's still somewhat of an issue in baking these items because there is Chala embedded in them. And by definition, some part of this is not ro'oi to be cooked or baked on Yom Tov. Tosafot also does bring a machloki between the Rashba and the Ri as to whether when, after the fact, you put it together to take off the mafrish l'chala, do you have to be mitzarfan betzal? You have to put them all together in a basket to join them together. The Rashba has the belief that if you have a shir chala beforehand, you don't need to do it. Because putting them together is only to generate the chiyuv chala, to have a single entity and generate the chala, but that was already present when you started to need it. If you have them in separate pieces in the beginning, and now you want to bring them into a single shiur, then you need the basket to join them together. But here where you started out with a shir that was chayav in the chala, then we don't have to worry about after the fact to bring them together. So you don't have to put them into the basket. You don't have to. All you have to do is keep them in proximity to each other so that you take off the chala from that which is proximate. On the other hand, the Ri believes even if there was a shir chala beforehand, you still have to put them together in the basket afterwards to bring them together in order to be mafish chala min amukaf. To take off the chala from something that's proximate because the basket makes them all proximate to each other. That this chala is ra'ui to cover all. Next chala is ra'uya to cover all that is found inside of this basket.
Now Gemara says, Itmar. We're going to talk about this case or this issue of Ho'il again. Ha'ofim Yom Tov L'chol. Someone who bakes or cooks on Yom Tov for a weekday. Rav Chista Amar Luke. Rav Chista says you get Malkot for it. Rabba Omar Inu Luke. Rabba says you do not get Malkot for it. Rav Chista Amar Luke. Rav Chista says you get Malkot. Lo Amrin and Ho'il Umiklele Orchim. I don't say that maybe new guests will show up and therefore it's not problematic. Obviously, Rabba does think that way. So now what this is suggesting is that a person wants to cook on Yom Tov. If he cooks on Yom Tov to chol, to a weekday, that's problematic. On the other hand, we do have situations where we have, there are people coming in or visiting you. If these people come and visit you, then when you make food or you prepare certain items for them, that's totally permissible. So it happens to be late on the afternoon on the day of Yom Tov, and this person goes in and starts cooking up some stuff for his hetuchel nefesh, I can cook it up. Well, the truth is you really can't cook it up because you already had your meals on Yom Tov. And there's no reason for you to be preparing over here. What you're really doing is preparing for chol. You're really preparing for the weekday that is afterwards. And that is not permissible. So that's why Rav Chista says you're going to get malkot over here. Because you're doing something that is totally or completely unnecessary. You are finished eating and now you're cooking on Yom Tov. Why are you cooking on Yom Tov if you're finished eating? Must be that you're trying to prepare for after Yom Tov. On the other hand, Rabba says you don't get malkot because he says, you know what? Even if you're not going to eat it, maybe some guests that you have over will eat it. Hol miklei l'orchim. There's a possibility that guests might drop by unannounced. If they drop by unannounced, the food that you prepared is ra'oi for them. It is possibly good for them. And we say, that's ho'il. Ho'il, since if the situation turned out to be this way, that he had guests come over, he is permitted to cook it. then so too in this case, even though the guests aren't here yet or haven't come yet, he is permitted to cook it. Now this is a major machloket, which we're going to see in 1 second, which has to do with Erev Tavshilin or how Erev Tavshilin works, which is Rabbo and Rav Chista arguing about this idea of Miklei Orchim. Do we say that guests can show up? And if guests can show up, that will permit you to cook more food, even though you don't want to eat, because these individuals need to eat. Or we say, we're not really interested in whether you have guests over or not guests over. You're done with your Yom Tov meals. You're cooking over here. That's extraneous. That is unnecessary. So that's what the Gemara says here. Rav Chista amar lo ke lo amrin in hoil. Doesn't apply this principle of hoyo, because maybe guests can come. That's not enough a reason. Rabba Amar, ain't okay. You don't get makot. I'm reading hoyo. We do invoke this principle of hoyo, and therefore, Rabba says you don't get makot, because you really were not over an Isur, because the guests might have come and taken it. So in that sur. Amalei Rabba, the Rav Chista, the Rabba challenges Rav Chista. Lidi Dakta Martlo, I'm reading hoyo. According to you, it doesn't say hoyo. Heich ofim yom tov the Shabbat. How do we cook on Yom Tov in preparation for Shabbat? Because if you say that cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbat is problematic, then how are you ever allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbat? Because as soon as you finish the meals on Yom Tov, you're done. You need to no longer cook. Then all of a sudden you're putting on food to warm it up, to cook it up for Shabbat. How could you do that? You're done with what you were supposed to be doing. You should get Malkot for that. So he says, Hamalei Mishum Eruvei Tavshilin. Back to him, because you make an Erev Tavshilin. Because you have an Erev Tavshilin, now you're allowed to prepare. It says, Umishum Eruvei Tavshilin, Shari and Yisur Doraita. Here we're talking about an Yisur Doraita to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat. And also you say, we have an institution, the Rabbana, that takes care of it. Eruv Tavshilin. Why would the institution, the Rabbana, override the core Doraita or Torah principle over here? So he says, Amalei, I'll explain it to you. Mi Doraita, Mina Torah, Tzorchei Shabbat, Nasim Bi Yom Tov. You're allowed to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat. As Rashi claims over here, Shabbat Yom Tov Chada Kedusha Hi, V'Tervayu, Shabbat Ikru, they're one type of Kedusha, they're both called Shabbat in the Torah, so there is this common denominator between them, which allows you to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat. So now, if that's the case, why do you need an Erev Tavshilin? So Rabbanan Hu De Gazru Gizbei Gzeira, the Rabbanan put in a Gzeira, Shema Yomru Ofim Yom Tov Aftechol, because they're afraid that if we let you cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat, you'll think you can cook from Yom Tov to Chol as well. So how do we differentiate it? We say you have to make some difference. What's the difference? The Chamim insisted that you have an Erev Tavshilin. Therefore, now it's Mukar that you're only preparing for Shabbat, and you can't normally just cook on Yom Tov for whatever you want. So we have two ways here. We have Machloket Rabba and Rav Chista, basically to explain two things. One is, if you cook on Yom Tov, do you get Malkot or not get the Malkot? And number two is, with regards to preparing from Yom Tov Shabbat, Eruv Tavshilin, which is going to happen this year. In Chutz Laaretz, it's going to happen 3 times in the beginning of Yom Tov, and Eretz Yisrael is going to happen over Rosh Hashanah, going into Shabbat. Then on the Friday going to Shabbat, you're going to need to prepare on Yom Tov. How do you do that? How does that work? Machloket Rabba and Rav Chista. Rabba says the way it works is that Yom Tov, you're not allowed to cook for Shabbat. So then, what do? You say, I cook anyway. Why? Because maybe guests will show up. Guests will show up, then I'm permitted to cook. So I'm really cooking more for Yom Tov. Nobody showed up. I'll use it for Shabbat. That's how it works for Rabba. On the other hand, for Rav Chista, he says, you know what? You can prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat. There's no problem. Preparing from Yom Tov to Shabbat is totally permissible. So then why do I need an Erev Tavshilin? It's because Chamim would go there. There goes there that you may not cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat, because if we let you do that, you'll come and cook from Yom Tov to Chol as well, which is impermissible. So what do? We say, don't do that, unless you put in an Erev Tavshilin. So now you have a Heker. It's clear the reason that we're allowing you to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat is because of Erev Tavshilin. Alright. From Yom Tov to Yom Tov is a totally different issue, which is whether it has to do with Sveika de Yoma, or why you have 2 days of Yom Tov. Okay, very good. So Rosh Hashanah, where there's no Sveika de Yoma, is a Kedusha Achat, where it's a single Kedusha, you would think you should be able to cook from one day of Yom Tov to the other day. But when we say that Rosh Hashanah is Kedusha Achat, that doesn't mean that it's Kedusha Achat entirely. It really means that it's a fake. We don't know. It is maybe Shtei Kedushot, maybe Kedusha Achat. We're Makpid on both. We take it the Chumrah. Rosh Hashanah is the Chumrah in both cases. We're the Chumrah on Kedusha Achat, and we're Chumrah on the Shtei Kedushot. And cooking happens to be one of those issues of Shtei Kedushot. And therefore, we're going to be Makpid on Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah, not cooking from one day of Rosh Hashanah to the other, even though it's called Kedusha Achat. Try that Kedusha Achat is opposed to other days of Yom Tov. Other cases of Yom Tov, it's clear that it's a Sveika de Yoma and it's not Kedusha Achat. So Rosh Hashanah is Kedusha Achat, but not just pure Kedusha Achat. If it was pure Kedusha Achat, Eino Hanami, you could cook from one to the other, you could do whatever you wanted. It would be all one single big day. But it's not the case. The case is that it's Kedusha Achat, the Chumrah, because we're Choshesh, it's Kedusha Achat. But you also worry about it being 2 days. And if it's 2 days of Yom Tov and it's Sveika de Yoma, now you have a real issue. Because we don't know which day is Yom Tov. If the first day is Chol, then if you cooked on the first day for the second day, no problem. The real problem comes up is if the first day is Yom Tov and the second day is Chol, now you're cooking from Yom Tov to Chol. And now you have a serious issue, which is that you're not permitted to do that. And that's why you cannot cook from one day of Yom Tov to the other day of Yom Tov. And Erev Tov Shalim won't help you over here because there is no solution over here. Now, Hol Mikle Orchim truthfully would work in this case. Hol Mikle Orchim, like we saw before, according to Rabba, says even on Yom Tov itself, going to Chol, it'd be permitted to cook in that way. Now, you won't get Malkot. Rabba does not suggest you do this, does not advocate doing this. It just says, if you do this, you won't get Malkot because Chol Mikle Orchim. But we wouldn't say the Chatkila that you should do, act in this manner and say, oh, yeah, maybe guests are going to come. So he does apply Hoyo B'di'evit, but he's not going to say the Chatkila that you should do it in this manner or you should have Hoyo in this manner. Now, Tosafot over here asks a question, and this question is very important because it has implications of Halacha, which is, what about, you have in other places that Hachonah D'Rabba. Hachonah D'Rabba is that we're not allowed to prepare from Yom Tov to Chol or from Shabbat to Chol. You can't prepare in any of these instances. Now, according to Rabba, what does that mean? How do you ever have Malkot on cooking from Yom Tov to Chol or from Shabbat to Yom Tov? How can it be Asur? It's always Hoel Mikle Orchim. Could have guests that show up. Since you could have guests show up, there's really never a time where it's going to be Asur. So now, Tosafot gives two different answers here. The second one is the one that's very interesting, which is Inami. Because if he does something so close to the end of the day, where there's no chance that guests will show up, then you have a problem. And that is why it has an afkamil alocha, which is Erev Tashlim. Our Erev Tashlim today could function in one of two ways. Either it's completely permissible to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat, but we just have the institution of Erev Tashlim. If that's the case, then you basically can cook on Yom Tov straight into Shabbat, like up to the last minute, and wouldn't be a problem. On the other hand, you believe that the heter to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat is Hoel Mikle Orchim, the possibility that guests will show up, and you'll have extra food, and then you'll carry that over into Shabbat. That's only true if there's enough time left in the day that guests could show up. As a machloket had a paskin in the Rishonim, and because we're makpid for this shita of Rabba, that's Hoel Mikle Orchim, that means that if you want to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat, like for instance this year, you want to cook on the second day of Yom Tov to Shabbat. You want to heat things up. You want to prepare things for Shabbat. The din is that you have to do with enough time left in the day that guests can show up. If you throw something onto the oven or onto the pot right before Shabbat, that doesn't work because it's no longer Hol Mikle Orchim. You do not have enough time for the Orchim to show up, for the guests to show up. So that's why when you be makpid, when even when you have Erev Tov Shalim, if you're going to prepare for Shabbat, that you do it on Yom Tov with sufficient time left in the day that guests can show up. And that's why you have to be happy to put it on the fire to get it ready, to point of readiness with enough time left in the day that guests could actually show up and eat it and enjoy it. Now, they don't have to show up, but they have to have that potential. And that is the nafkah, and that's many times, I'm sure there are abundant in every community mentioned this, that you should make sure to put it on, you know, hour, 2 hours before Shabbat in order to ensure that there's this gap of time for Hoel Mikle Orchim. The other thing that we have to discuss here is just a little bit about what is this whole idea of Erev Tov Shalim. We'll get to it in Beitza, Daf Bet Amud Bet. There's a sugya there as well. We'll spend more time on it over there, but I just want to note it here, which is what's the institution of Erev Tov Shalim over here. When we say that it's Asur, Midrabanan, in the case where we say that it's really allowed to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbat, but we are Gozer Midrabanan, why were the Chachamim Gozer? What were they trying to protect? Were they trying to protect the Kavod of Shabbat? Or are they trying to protect the Kvod Yom Tov? So it could be that they're trying to protect Kvod Yom Tov, which is, we don't want you to violate Yom Tov and cook from Yom Tov to Chol. Why do we make you make a Erev Tov Shalim? So that when you come to Yom Tov and cook to Shabbat, you won't go then and cook from Yom Tov to Chol. It's all about protecting Yom Tov. And not that people are not light about the Easter Melacha and Yom Tov and say, oh, we can cook from Yom Tov to Shabbat, we should be able to cook from Yom Tov to Chol. It's all about protecting Yom Tov. On the other hand, if you say that the issue here is that Yom Tov is making the Shabbat, and the Chachamim just put the institution in here of Erev Tov Shalim. Why do they institute it? So Rashi in some places says they institute it to make sure that you do prepare for Shabbat. It's part of Hachanah to Shabbat. in order to force you to make sure that you think about it and you start the preparations beforehand, that is what the Erev Tashlin is about. Erev Tashlin is to remind you that you need to do preparations for Shabbat, and you have to prepare properly for Shabbat. The other possibility is similar to what we said before, which is it's about protecting Yom Tov. Again, in Ochanami, you can go from Yom Tov to Shabbat, but we don't want that just to be there, just going from Yom Tov to Shabbat, because if we do that and allow it to be totally open, then people, again, are not going to be so makpid on Yom Tov, and they're going to come to cook or bake from Yom Tov to Chol. That is a chakira, a difference here, about what we're focused on in the Erev Tashlin and the Gzera of the Tevet Shalina. We're focused on protecting Shabbat. We're focused on protecting Yom Tov. And that might actually lead to the difference in opinions here as to what the Erev Tashlin or how it's functioning. Is it functioning to protect Yom Tov, or is it functioning to protect Shabbat? Right now we're going to continue the Gemara. Etevei Behema Misukenet. You have a Behema that's on the verge of dying. So now it's verge of dying, it's Yom Tov. So now what is he going to do? If he shechs it on Yom Tov, he's going to have a problem. That's a malocha on Yom Tov. It's only permissible if he does it for Ochal Nefesh. So lo yishchol. Ella, kadesh yuchal le'achol hemenek hazayit slimi bold yom. The only way you can check this is if you can roast a kazayit worth of meat from this animal at the end of Yom Tov and eat it. Because once you've done that, you've now made it necessary, because you only can get a kazayit of meat if you shecht an animal. You can't get a kazayit of meat without shechting a whole animal. If you check the whole animal, it'll be permissible on Yom Tov as long as you eat something on Yom Tov. You have to eat it. Yochol le'achol, afgadol boi mecha. It only has to be the potential to eat it. You don't have to actually eat it. It just has to be the potential to eat it, and that's enough. So now he says, Bishlam adidi de amri hoyo. According to me, Rabbi says, who says, yo, ho vi bai le mecha matzi ochel. So since he could eat it, it's as if he ate it. Meshuch machi ishchot. That's why you can check that on Yom Tov, because there was that possibility of eating it in that manner. You don't apply this principle of hoyo. Why should he allow to be shecht over here? If you don't allow for hoyo to take place, why should it be permissible to shecht on Yom Tov? You're not going to eat it. You have the potential to eat it, but you're not going to eat it. So I'm letting Mishum say mimono. Because if we don't let him do it, he's going to lose a lot of money here. If he doesn't shecht his animals will come in a veil and it's going to be worthless. We allow him to shecht to protect his money. It says Mishum hefse mimono shirin nisur deoraita. To protect his money, protect his possessions, we're going to allow you to violate an Isur Doraita? Where it says, I'm laying in? Yes. Mishum Hefsed Mamono, Gamar B'liol Lechol Kezayit. That's exactly what's happening here. Because there's such a great loss that he's going to have if this Behema dies, he, even though he has no desire to eat, and has no appetite for eating, nevertheless, he'll press himself to the point that he'll eat it because he knows it's going to protect his possessions. So since he knows he's going to protect him, therefore, Gamar B'Libo Lechol Kezayit. He already comes to the conclusion he's definitely going to eat this Kezayit and Zippy ate the Kezayit. Because that's what he determined, that's what he decided. V'yifshel Kezayit Pesar below Shechita. And since you can't have Kezayit Pesar without Shechita, he's got to shech the whole animal. And that's what permits it here on Yom Tov. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll continue with this Sugya tomorrow.